You're listening to episode 42 of the FitsPro podcast, and today is the Q&A for all things travel. So if you do not know, Nate and I traveled the world for a year in 2018 to 2019, and we are taking off in January 2020. We actually have our first date. We fly to Mexico City on January 7th. So this podcast is nothing about fitness, nothing about business. It is all about how to travel the world and answering all of your lovely questions. So without further ado, let's dive in. The FitsPro podcast is your no BS approach to seeking out truth in the world that is online health and fitness. You'll see through the lens of the trainer, the trainee, and the entrepreneur. I'm your host, Annie Miller, certified strength and conditioning specialist, entrepreneur, lover of sleep, lattes, and dinosaurs, aka not your average FitsPro. And my aim is to help you grow your mind, body, and business through knowledge and authenticity so that you too can become a FitsPro. All right, so these questions cover everything from travel insurance to finding cheap flights to choosing accommodations to eating while traveling, all of the things. So I hope that this is going to be a fun one for you guys. Whether you are going to travel the world or not, it should be entertaining. So first question, important things for travel prep like travel insurance. So for travel prep, I am going to say that you have a few must need or need to know items here. They include, but are not limited to, travel insurance. We use World Nomads. Fun fact, we were exempt from needing insurance in 2018 because we were out of the country for the months that we did not have health insurance. So that was winning. And travel insurance does not count as normal medical insurance, so just know that. World Nomads has a few options. We went with the highest option just to be safe. We were traveling with a drone, a camera, lenses, two laptops, and some valuables that we felt were worth having coverage for. Nate's wallet was actually stolen in our first location, Santiago, Chile, and we filed a claim, and we received $83, I believe it was, something close to that. And yes, that was stressful, but it was so nice to know that when we rented a vehicle, like in Europe for 4 weeks, we knew that we had coverage. So they also provide hotlines that you can contact in case of emergency or sickness that will lead you to the direction of English-speaking medical doctors and facilities. Insurance is always for the peace of mind, right? Rarely do you need it, but you sleep a little easier at night knowing that you have it if something does happen. No, I am not sponsored by them. I've just done a shite ton of research and they're the best. So that's why I share it with you. Next would be the two V's of international travel, vaccinations and visas. You can look up what vaccinations are required for wherever you're going and then suggested for those countries that you're planning to visit on the CDC website. Okay. Then find a travel clinic near you. So when you go to the CDC website, you'll type in wherever you're going. And I'll link all this in the show notes, you guys. And then you can see, what is required, like you cannot enter without this. And then what they suggest, you get to choose on that list what you want to get. Okay, you obviously need to get what's required. But then anything other than that, kind of up to your discretion. And then, like I said, you need to visit a travel clinic near you or simply call your doctor's office and they will lead you where you need to go, because it is likely that your doctor's office is not going to cover most of these vaccinations. Next, the other V is visas. So the Millers had a rough go around with visas on our first trip around the world. It all turned out fine, but we misunderstood the rules for the European 90-day tourist visa and overstayed by 23 days. So that was fun. I've mentioned it before, but just so you know, we drove, took buses, and had flights through 14 different European countries. So our passports looked like a freaking hot mess, you guys, and we were not asked about any of it, any of our itinerary, any of our timeline, how long we'd been there, until we flew from Poland to Thailand. So we'd finally leave Europe from the Helsinki Airport in Finland, And we had a 45-minute transfer, and they held us at customs. Long story short, we were clueless. Like, I handed them the passports, like, oh, here you go. And they were like, how long have you been here? I showed him my dates, September, and he's like, yeah, that's 4 months. And I was like, oh. So we thought that Scotland, going to Scotland, broke up our 90 days, and then it restarted a new 90 days when we re-entered into the European Union. But the rule is 90 days within a 180-day period, and that is a rolling 180 days. So we def stayed for 4 months, which is definitely over 90 days. Oops. But because we weren't coming back anytime soon, they gave us a stamp and let us go. And we sprinted, literally sprinted to our gate, made the flight. It was all fine. When traveling from the Philippines to Vietnam, waiting to board our plane, we were informed that we needed a visa for Vietnam. Somehow, in our planning, we just didn't see that, right? Like, most everything went pretty good. We don't have any big regrets from our trip, but we just missed that U.S. citizens needed a visa for Vietnam. So having lodging booked and an itinerary we needed to try to stick to, we hopped on the computer, missed our flight, expedited the visas, booked a new flight for the next day, had to get a hotel near the airport. It was a rush, but it did all work out again, just a few extra $100 later. But it did work out. So just do a Google, fam, quote unquote, do U.S. citizens or wherever you're from, you know, do Australian citizens need a visa for blank? Enter desired country for everywhere that you want to go. Okay, this is why it's so important to do ahead of time. From there, it can be tricky or super easy depending on the country. So some countries are visa upon arrival. Other require more information, pictures of your passports, a photo to be emailed or mailed to them, etc. It just totally depends on the country, which is why I say the two V's need to be addressed early on in your planning: vaccinations and visas. Beyond travel insurance and the two V's, I would suggest having a credit card that will benefit you while traveling long-term overseas. You don't want to deal with foreign transaction fees or your bank blocking your card because you're in friggin' Bangladesh or something. Plus, you get all of the points if you use certain credit cards, obviously. We did annoying amounts of research before we left on our round one around the world, and we love the Chase Sapphire Reserve. This also gave us the option of tacking on the Priority Pass, which gets us into nearly all international lounges in the airports, which, fam, if you followed me on Instagram while we were traveling, you know, I cannot tell you how much airport lounges have changed my life. You think I'm joking? Do you know how absolutely amazing it is to get off your plane or arrive 4 hours early or have a 5-hour layover and go directly to a lounge with free food, drinks, it's quiet, alcohol is included in those drinks, you have comfy chairs, you have space, quiet seating areas, private seating areas, good Wi-Fi, in comparison to buying overpriced airport food, sitting in intensely uncomfortable airport seating with who knows how many other humans packed in. If you travel internationally, hear me now, you need a Priority Pass or something similar. It is the best day ever. And I think it was like $99 a year or something. Like, it was worth it in our first flight from the U.S. to Santiago, Chile. Just being in that one lounge in LAX, I was like, it's worth it, period. Like, my life has changed. We then used the points from the credit card to get flights or hotels, whichever suited our need, right? So you do research and see if it's best to use the points or just book on booking.com or whatever. So get your vaccinations, your visas, your insurance, and a credit card. Like I said, we suggest the Chase Sapphire Reserve. Moving on to the next question. I am combining these two questions because they can go hand in hand, and that is cost breakdowns and pricing or planning tips. How much you plan, any websites, or how do you plan, excuse me, any website recommendations, and then you know, how do you find the best deals on places to stay, cheap flights, all of those things are kind of intertwined. So cost breakdown is hard because this is completely dependent on you. But I would say for two people, 50 to 60 grand per year is a good average. And you guys, I don't care about talking about numbers. I don't think money is weird. I think it's fine to talk about money. So sorry if this is offensive or makes you feel funny, but you don't have to listen. You could do it in less than that, and you could certainly do it in more. We met a family along the way who was likely spending 20 plus K per month just on lodging. I'm very comfortable making that assumption with that. So some tips for budgeting is to weigh your options, right? For long-term travel, it will always be cheaper to stay for a month somewhere when talking about Airbnb. So the most we ever paid for a month-long stay, which is 28 days in an Airbnb was $1,200 a month. And that was on the beach in Copacabana, Rio de Janeiro. On the flip side, we paid more than that for a a week and a half in a villa in Bali was $1,700, right? So when you stay for 28 days in an Airbnb, you get massive monthly discounts. So just keep that in mind. It's one of the reasons we traveled slower in our first trip around the world. We use Airbnb and Booking.com for accommodations. And because we use Booking.com so often, we do have some like membership thing where we get extra discounts. I don't know all the details on that, but we love Booking because you can often reserve a place and pay at the property or at a later date instead of paying for everything up front. That is particularly helpful to us because we tend to plan in large chunks at a time. So spending or spreading out that payment can be nice. You know, if something is going to be $1,000 and we're booking five or six other things at a time that are over $1,000, it's nice if you can kind of spread that out throughout your year. So I haven't yet purchased this, but likely will. My friend Chloe, her IG is Deeper Than Money, has a negotiation playbook. And I know people save on hotels and Airbnbs using her scripts all the time. So that is about to be a part of the Miller Travel Toolbox as well. I will make sure to mention her and tag her in the show notes. She's just amazing. She has an amazing outlook on money. She has an amazing story with money. If you don't follow her, you should. Seasons are also important to consider for accommodations. So we find that booking further in advance tends to be cheaper. The closer we get, the more prices increase and your options for accommodations decrease. So you would think that people are desperate to like get you in so that they would drop the prices, but that's not how it works. They know you need a place to stay, and so they'll keep the price the same or even inflate it because they know that you'll end up paying it because you need an accommodation. That's been our experience anyway. Book in advance unless you like arriving somewhere and walking to hotels and hostels to negotiate for a cheaper price in person. That is not how we want to spend our time, but we definitely met people who that is how they travel. So to each his own, totally depends on you. For flights, we use Skyscanner and Kiwi. There are great deals sometimes on Google Flights. But because we plan things in advance and not last minute, it's more about finding the best deal on exactly what we're looking for, you know? So Google Flights is like an accident, right? A low fare, and you're like, oh, we can go to Iceland or we can go to Thailand on this date. And that's not what we do, right? We plan out our year or 6 months or whatever. So it doesn't fit us, but it might fit you. What we like about Kiwi is that you don't have to pick a date. So you can see the prices on a spread for the entire month at a time and see trends in price fluctuations. So some flights just don't fluctuate much, but often you can look ahead and see the best time to purchase for a certain location. Like it might seem to be about 3 months or 6 weeks out from the departure date. So you can see those trends on Kiwi, and that can kind of help you determine when you should be purchasing your tickets for that place. Earlier isn't always better, sometimes it's closer. It just takes some time, but Kiwi is a great one to do that, and that's just kiwi.com. We will play around in the beginning of our planning with different locations that we want to go to and choose which flights we will buy and when based on that little bit of market research done with Kiwi. So like we plan to book all of our flights leading up to Patagonia. So that's for the first like 3 months of 2020. And then we'll purchase our flights to New Zealand and Japan while we are in South America, because we've done that research so we can see, you know, how much we need to have set aside for those and what is the best time to purchase those. On that note, always search in incognito. On a Mac, I believe it is Command-Shift-N. But you can, you know, look it up on Wi-Fi just, or look it up on Google. Just look up, you know, incognito on blank PC. MacBook Pro, whatever it is, it will show you the code to search incognito. I kid you not, Nate and I have tested this more than once, and the more often he searched for flights, the price would literally increase over time, while mine, being incognito, didn't change at all. Of course, we were doing this at like the exact same searches multiple times to make sure that, you know, it wasn't a fluke of some kind. So we have tested it many times. It is absolutely true. If you can search incognito, you know, companies can't see that you have been searching over and over again, and they can't inflate those prices. However that happens, I don't know, but it definitely does happen. If you don't have a Mac, just Google, like I said, how to search incognito on your laptop or whatever you have. Knowing local holidays can also be helpful. We had to book a few flights during some Southeast Asia holidays in different countries, and it doubled the price of those flights, which wasn't a huge deal, but we had to fly during those dates, so we couldn't get around it. But it would have been worth knowing ahead of time for sure if you can't avoid flying during the equivalent of, you know, spring break or Christmas in the States. Obviously, you want to avoid those times. So monthly Airbnbs will save you. You can 100% negotiate prices. In fact, we have, when we added a person and the price doubled, we called, you know, BS on that, and contacted them and said, hey, you know, this is what was happening. This was the price and we were good at that. But then we added a person and it doubled. And these are the reasons that, you know, we don't think that that is feasible or makes any sense. Worded nicely, of course, and they lowered the price back to the original starting point. So compare Airbnb and booking.com. Sometimes hotels are actually cheaper than Airbnbs in different areas, so make sure that you do that research and look into it. Also worth noting, we tend to stay in a hotel the night before we travel out of wherever we are, because it's so nice to just have a hotel set up a shuttle or a taxi for you, not have to worry about, you know, putting the trash for your Airbnb where it needs to be and making sure the key is back in the key box, etc. Hotels can just make the travel experience smoother and less stressful for sure. So we tend to stay in a hotel the night before we are going to leave and start traveling somewhere else. Flights, play around with Skyscanner and Kiwi, look for trends, keep an eye out for holidays and stay away from those. Consider seasons, accommodations and seasons, and seasons can double. Accommodations and flights can double and even triple in prices so easily in high seasons. We like to try and be everywhere in an off season or in the shoulder season, and that is how we largely plan our trips. Like, when is the best time to be somewhere? Okay, now we're gonna go a month before that or a month after that, because we don't want to be there when it's full of humans. List everywhere that you want to go, then research the best seasons to be there, not for being there in high season. Then plug and chug from there, right? Start to put your puzzle together. So for this next round, we do need to be in a few places during high season just due to weather and availability of certain things like Patagonia, for instance. But traveling in the off season or shoulder season will absolutely save you money, and you'll likely get to enjoy your travels with less tourists around, which for us is always winning. It is always the goal. Next question. There was a lot in that last one. I hope that it was helpful though. Mindset around not working out as much and still eating foods you enjoy. Dude, to be honest, we just live life, right? We both like meat, we both like protein. We try to get it in at each meal. And when we're traveling, honestly, we eat less often, right? We'll eat breakfast, and then if we're not out and about, we'll wait until dinner to eat again. So we're kind of, by default, intermittent fasting. So For us, we kind of noticed our caloric intake didn't change as we traveled. So, and that was just, like I said, kind of by default. You know, in fact, food is a huge motivator of traveling for us. We want to eat amazing food. We want to try the local food. We want to try new food. And so that's what we do. As far as not working out, this can be frustrating for me. Well, for us both, but I actually enjoy running when we travel. I don't advertise this very much, but it's, I think, one of the most fun ways to get fresh air and to see a new city. In fact, in Rio, we could have easily got a gym membership, but we literally chose not to because we would just run on the beach almost every day. And their boardwalk was amazing. They had like pull-up bars and jungle gyms and stuff outside. So we just opted to do that. And we were very active in Rio. So my mindset when we travel is completely different from when we're home, and I think that expectations are so important to set up beforehand. So I don't see it as a season to make gains or work on my body in any way, really, or, you know, even pay attention to how it's changing. I move for the sake of health and moving when we travel. My body takes on whatever shape it takes on during those times, you know, like I'm not attempting to keep a certain shape or build a certain shape. That would just lead to disappointment and frustration, right? So embrace the season for what it is. It's a season to travel and see new things and try new foods and have new experiences, not to become Quadzilla. I spoke more about this too in my last episode, episode 41, which was a question and answer about training and programming. So check that out too. But yeah, we eat decently healthy when we're home anyway. And we tend to do the same when we're traveling. We eat our vegetables and meats. And, you know, if we're having a little too much alcohol or a beer every day at lunch, we back off of that, you know. So, like I said, our life doesn't change much from when we are traveling to when we are at home. We look for protein. We really try to prioritize protein. And that's, you know, drinking enough water. And that's about it. And then you better believe I'm eating croissants if I'm in France. And I'm drinking wine. So, yeah. How to find the places we want to visit, tiny towns and secluded spots. I love this. Half, I would say, is from Instagram. Half is from research and just kind of going down rabbit holes. So we normally see someplace on Instagram or, you know, on a screen saver some places, like literally someplace came up on Nate's computer and we were like, oh my gosh, that's gorgeous. Let's go there. Via following travel accounts is huge on Instagram. And then we just start researching it. So we'll find a picture of someplace typically. And then before booking an Airbnb or location, we research the neighborhoods. So for Mexico City, we knew we wanted to start in South America, and we've wanted to go to Mexico City for a while. It made sense to start in Mexico City for us and then work our way down through South America to Patagonia. Great, Mexico City. Now, where do we stay? Research, quote unquote, best neighborhoods in Mexico City. Then normally you can see blogs that break down the different areas or neighborhoods in that city. We look for most of the restaurants, like where most of the good food is at and where is it safe. So good food, best neighborhoods, and safety are what we typically search for. And those are kind of our go-to parameters for determining where we're actually going to stay within a city. If we need public transportation, then obviously we will look up that as well. We don't have a car, so we walk a lot, or we use public transport, which is typically pretty easy to use in most places. We haven't had a problem with that yet. And through research, you'll find little towns and things, right? You'll just see it on a blog. It kind of just happens. We found our cottage hotel in the mountains of Switzerland because we knew we wanted to literally stay in the mountains. We didn't have an interest to stay in one of the larger cities. So we researched, quote unquote, best place to stay in the Swiss Alps or in the mountains of Switzerland. Like, that's where we want to stay. And you'll start to see little towns pop up. So honestly, it's just a lot of research, you guys. How to choose safe places to eat and how to eat healthy and make good food choices while traveling. You guys, for me, it's so much about habit. Like, do you make good food choices at home? Then you'll likely make good food choices when you're traveling. I don't even think about that really when we're traveling. So Nate does the research here and we use our sixth sense. If they're pulling meat out of a plastic bin that is just sitting outside, uncovered and unrefrigerated, prob's moving on to the next restaurant, right? And that is a depiction from experience. Okay, that actually happened somewhere. We eat pretty healthy. Like I said, nothing really changes for us while traveling, aside from like consistency and, you know, maybe a few supplements that we take. But like I said, we eat protein, we drink water, we eat what we like. We stop when we're satisfied. How do we communicate with locals? So Google Translate is life-changing. You can literally hold your phone over a sign or a menu and it will translate it on the screen into the chosen language. So from the chosen, or from the, you know, local language to English, you can speak into it in English and it will translate like verbally, audio-wise, to whatever language you need. We used this the most often, I would say, in Santiago, Chile, because out of all the places we went, it was our first location, and we met three people the entire time that spoke English. So technology is cool, but honestly, most people in the service industry that you will be interacting with will likely speak at least broken English. It's kind of pathetic, really. In our experience so far, people in other countries, a lot of countries speak multiple languages quite often. That's quite normal. And one is typically English. So it is decently easy to travel as an English-speaking human. Packing light, minimalist approach. That's the question. Packing light, minimalist approach. This took time for me, fam. I started packing for our first round, I kid you not, 6 months in advance. I had to go from having an entire room in our house dedicated to my wardrobe to literally living in a backpack for multiple seasons of the year. We are talking 19 degrees on the Baltic coast of Poland to 93 degrees with 90% humidity in Cambodia. How? Right? How do you fit all of that into a 55-liter backpack? With my makeup and, you know, toiletries and shoes for all of those seasons, quite frankly, you don't. I had my mom ship me stuff in Poland. We had friends who came to visit and they would bring us clothing items from home and then we would send ones home with them. We left things places, we bought things places. So to answer the question, you need to consider what weather you're going to be in and what items are multifaceted. What items can you use for, you know, dress them up, dress them down? That's what you're really looking for. And this is why I now just have a capsule wardrobe at home. It's all linked on my blog. If you missed it, I have my entire capsule wardrobe with all of the links laid out, all of the different outfits I can make. The first round of travel, I missed having my style. So I packed like a backpacker, more so, strictly for functionality, with items that were simple and could be used for different occasions, which was needed, but I really, really, really missed having my style about 5 months in. I love fashion, I love clothing. So for round two, I started planning my wardrobe before we even were home from round one. It's still functional, but to where I feel feminine and not like I'm gonna break out into a hike at any moment. And I can still express myself through my fashion, through my clothing, which I enjoy doing, but it can still be used for multiple purchases or multiple purposes. So I suggest making a list, like 5 pants, 2 shorts, 2 dresses, 5 tank tops, 2 shirts, 2 sweaters. Again, this totally depends on what climate you're going to be in. Packing would be a lot easier if you're only going to Southeast Asia, or you're only going to, you know, Iceland, Ireland, Sweden, and Norway in the winter. So something along those lines, you know, make kind of a rough list and then plug in items that you absolutely love and can be used for workouts or going to dinner, you know, just used for whatever purposes you're going to want to use them for. Also know that you are likely going to leave things and purchase things. Like I said, they just make the best clothing for the weather in Thailand in Thailand. And you might be surprised, things are often cheaper locally. So that is something to take into account, that you will be purchasing things likely from wherever you are, and that it's okay to leave things. They're just things. So for this round, I am packing mostly warm clothing, clothing that can be layered, because we will be in, you know, lows in the 30s, highs 70 is about the highest we're going to get. So for me, that is not like crazy warm weather at all. I can be in a long sleeve and jeans and be comfortable in that heat, depending where it is. Obviously, at higher elevations, it's going to feel hotter. But no extreme heat for sure. So my clothing this time is in a tighter range of degrees than last time. Where did we go on our Canada trip? This is the last question. So this is fun. We recently did a 2.5 week road trip through Canada. We rented a Mustang convertible and drove up the Washington Peninsula to Port Angeles, took the ferry to Victoria, stayed in the Rialto in Victoria, which I highly suggest. It was amazing. Had my conference for 2 days, the Prehab 101 conference, took a day to drive around the island, and then took a ferry to Vancouver, BC, stayed in a little basement Airbnb. It did the trick and was in a great location. I absolutely love Vancouver, BC so much. We drove to Kamloops for one night. I was highly, highly impressed with the dinner that we had there. You know, my expectations were very low and it was absolutely phenomenal. Then we were on to Banff. We stayed in Banff for 3 nights, I think, or 2 nights. 2 nights, 3 days. That'd be right. Really took it easy. So we waited until 5 p.m. both days to head over to the infamous Lake Louise and Moraine Lake, which I cannot tell you how much I suggest doing this, you guys. Get your sleep. No need to wake up at 5 a.m. to get a freaking parking spot and to see the lakes with other tourists. Dude, enjoy your day. Do a hike. Grab some lunch. Walk along the river. Eat dinner. And then 5:30, head over to the lakes once everybody else is leaving. The parking lots were literally more than half empty both days that we went. It was amazing. We did the Sorrel Ridge on the way to Calgary, and it was a complete fail. We were basically a week too late in the Rockies, so several hikes were already closed for the season, and the one that I had planned to do was on group access, meaning that you were legally required to have a group of four or more with bear spray, because grizzlies were at this time frequenting the trail. So Banff, like I said, was low-key. We hiked as far as we could up the Sorrel Ridge until we were literally sliding back down the hillside, and a hailstorm hit. So the day after we left Calgary, the Rockies got their first snowstorm of the season, which was great for us because our Mustang would not have been able to hang in that weather. It was gorgeous. It was fine. I will want to go back earlier in the season and do some ridge hikes for sure, because I didn't get that, you know, panoramic view of the Rockies like I was hoping, because I would really like to get a view like that, which Sorrel Ridge could have given us if we had, you know, yak tracks and it wasn't literally in the clouds all day. So that's it, fam. That wraps up the travel Q&A. Nate just bought our first tickets, like I said, for round two. Just a week ago or so, we are heading out on January 7th to our first location, which is Mexico City. Then we will head to Santa Marta, Colombia. From there, we will hit up the salt flats in Bolivia. That has been on my list for so long. From there, we will do an extensive road trip through Patagonia over the course of 18 to 20 days, not yet decided. So that's where we're starting off. I'm excited to take you guys with me over on the Instagram. Stay tuned for more on that. We got our passports expedited because we realized we needed new ones, or would need new ones at some point in our trip. So that was an expensive, overlooked issue on our part, but all is well, per usual, and we can book things once those passports get in. So if you haven't, please leave us 5 stars on iTunes with a written review. Obviously, this was outside of fitness or business, but I hope that it does inspire you to start planning a maybe extended trip or at least your next vacation. It's much appreciated when you guys leave a written review of the podcast, and I'll let you go now. Until next time, I am Annie Miller, and thank you so much for listening to the Fitzpro Podcast.